I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Matthew Petty. An increasing number of people in Florida are experiencing homelessness. The surge in homelessness comes as state lawmakers are considering legislation that some advocates see as punitive, a law that would make it illegal to sleep on public property. Florida's Council on Homelessness reported 30,809 individuals experiencing literal homelessness last year. That means not having a fixed, regular, or adequate place to stay, and includes people living in shelters. That's a 9% increase since 2019. The number of students experiencing homelessness in Florida is even higher. Today we're going to hear about a specific group of students who experience homelessness, kids who are separated from their families because of abuse or neglect, but who aren't part of the foster care system. We'll talk with a Tampa nonprofit leader, Vicky Sokolik, who works to support those students, and we'll hear from an alumnus of her program. First, though, we spoke via Zoom with Anne Ray, the Florida Housing Data Clearinghouse Manager at the University of Florida's Schimburg Center for Housing Studies. Estimates from 2022 show more than 78,000 students statewide experiencing homelessness. Ray began by explaining how student homelessness is measured.
So we're actually seeing a greater number of students who are experiencing homelessness. When the Department of Education measures homelessness among students, they actually use a much more expansive definition that includes different kinds of housing instability. And so in particular, a lot of families, when they're experiencing homelessness, they won't be in a shelter or they won't be on the street. They'll be doubled up with other people. Mm-hmm. And those households that are doubled up involuntarily, or if they're living in hotels and motels, schools may identify those students as homeless, as well as people who are living in shelters or in unsheltered locations. So as housing's gotten more expensive in Florida, we've seen an increase in family homelessness. And also, as schools have provided more services, learned more about how to identify students who might be experiencing homelessness, we then see an increase of students identified as homeless. I mean, that's a good thing when they're identified because it means that they can get services that they're entitled to.
Are you relying a lot more on teachers and school staff being trained to identify what to look out for?
Yeah, school staff, you know, teachers, bus drivers, people working in the cafeteria, paraprofessionals in the classroom, they really are the front line of identifying students who are homeless, or sometimes the school districts, to try and reduce the stigma so that people will want to identify and get the help that they need, might have a families in transition program, say. Every school district, actually every school district in the U.S., has one point person, at least one point person who's responsible for working with homeless students. And under federal legislation, students who are homeless there are entitled to transportation back to their old school if that's determined to be in their best interest. If they're moving schools, they can register quickly without all the documents that you might need. And when we did our research, we talked to these county homelessness liaisons at different school districts around the state. And they've really been involved in trying to build up students in a lot of different ways. I mean, certainly the things that comply with the federal law, but lots of little things too, getting donations from the community so that kids have access to clothes, kids have access to hygiene products, working with families to see if they can stabilize their situation. The state housing agency has worked with some school districts to start providing rental assistance through the school district to families who have been identified as homeless to get them back on their feet. So identifying students as homeless is a way of counting, but it's also a way of making sure these really dedicated staff are helping get kids what they need. And it was really moving speaking to them, just their passion and also their creativity in figuring out how to make sure these kids can have a good school experience.
So what are some of the solutions to youth homelessness, and where are you seeing some solutions being put into practice and successfully done?
So the way we tackle our homelessness problem is to tackle our affordable housing problem. I really see those as two very intertwined things. And as our housing has gotten more expensive, you know, so have our levels of homelessness increased.
That's a pretty big problem to try and solve too, isn't it?
It is, but we have solutions for it that we know that work. we were experienced in building a system to increase the supply of affordable housing. And here in Florida, we're really fortunate that we have the largest state housing trust fund in the country that enables us to develop new housing, both homeownership opportunities and affordable rental housing. And a good portion of that is devoted to family housing. And so continuing to increase our supply of affordable housing to make sure that these county liaisons who are working directly with students have the resources that they need. And that's both, you know, the public resources that come to them, but also the private resources from the community. And then I think this pilot program that's been happening where the state has specifically been identifying families that need rental assistance by working directly with individual school districts has been really successful.
That was Anne Ray, a researcher with the Schomburg Center at the University of Florida. You're listening to Florida Matters. We're talking about youth homelessness. Coming up, we'll hear from a Tampa nonprofit leader who's working to help unhoused students who are living apart from their families or guardians. Welcome back to Florida Matters. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the surge in homelessness and the impact that homelessness has on students. Florida has seen a 9% increase in the number of people experiencing homelessness in the last 5 years. And advocates worry about the punitive impacts of new legislation targeting homelessness that lawmakers are considering this legislative session. According to estimates from the Schomburg Center for Housing Studies at the University of Florida, there were more than 78,000 homeless students in Florida in 2022. 6,342 of them were unaccompanied, not living with family or a guardian. To learn more about this uniquely vulnerable population, we sat down with Vicky Sokolik, who runs a nonprofit called Starting Right Now. It provides support to unhoused, unaccompanied youth in Hillsborough and Pinellas counties. Vicky just published a book about her work with the nonprofit. It's called If You See Them, Young, Unhoused, and Alone in America. We also talked with Jamal, a 19-year-old student at St. Leo University and a graduate of Starting Right Now. Because of his experience with homelessness, Jamal doesn't want his family to be identified, so he asked that we only use his first name. Vicky, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Matthew, for having us.
And Jamal, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So Vicky, I want to start with you. You began your organization about 15 years ago, and this was after helping mentor a student in Hillsborough County who was experiencing homelessness. What made you realize that there was a population of students that weren't really being taken care of already?
Well, as I navigated the system with Amanda, who was the first student that I had helped, it came to light through the school district that there were other kids in her same situation. And I couldn't imagine a 17-year-old or someone younger having to navigate a system that they knew nothing about. Even my own two biological kids could not have done that. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think, I mean, they needed an advocate and I could be it.
Jamal, how did you find out about Starting Right Now?
Well, through my social worker at school, I found out about it.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the situation was like for you, like what it was that put you in the situation where you're like, okay, I need some extra help. I can't live, you know, with my guardian or parent.
My mom, she would tell me to go get a job and things, but she would never give me my social security number or anything that I would need to get the job. And she wouldn't pay for any of my food, any of my clothes or anything. And she would make me have to wash my own clothes, so I had to come up with money to do my own. And sometimes she wouldn't let me in the house at night, so I would sleep on the ground outside and things of that sort. And it's like every other day, you never know what you're going to get when you walk in that door. Like one day she might be happy and she might let you inside. The next day she might not. It just depended on how she felt.
I wonder if you could kind of walk us through what a day in the life of an unhoused student is like in the situation. Like, what are some of the things that people might not understand about the challenge that someone in that situation would face?
Well, one of those challenges would be for somebody that might not have parents or a guardian at home, if there's an event or something and your parents need to be contacted or they come and everybody's parents are coming and you don't have your parents to be there with you, that can really take a toll on you because you see how everybody else has theirs and it's family oriented, so it kind of takes a toll on a kid.
So before you were part of the SRN program, you were struggling with some of those emotional challenges as well.
Yes, sir. One of those would be, I was a senior in high school, so you would have your graduation pictures, gowns, all that stuff. I wasn't going to be able to pay for those things because I didn't have the money to pay for them and my mom wasn't going to help me. So I had to figure out a way and I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those events at the beginning of the school year, I couldn't be a part of. Grad pictures, I couldn't do none of that.
It sounds like you had some good friends who would, you could kind of lean on them a little bit for support if you were, you know, you weren't able to go home, you could maybe spend the night with them. So they had an idea of what you were going through. But
yes, sir.
Do you think it's easy for other students to maybe just not pay attention or just not be aware of what's going on?
I think that we hide it so well sometimes that people don't really notice it. Like, you go to school and you're a regular kid and you come back, but people don't know that you don't have a place to stay or that you're going from house to house, couch to couch.
Mm-hmm. Vicky, can you break down what your program looks like? Is it a shelter, a mentorship, a little bit of both?
It is not a shelter. We are permanent housing for youth that need support, and we are more than a bed. We are a holistic program that offers everything from education support to mentoring to life skills training to planning for your future, mental health, medical. We are completely holistic to make sure that we are looking at the student as a whole individual, and we're individualized. No two students need the same services. We want to make sure that we are actually doing what's in the best interest of that student.
And you have a presence in Hillsborough County, but also Pinellas County?
Correct.
So how many students are you helping out right now?
So our house in Hillsborough can house 35, and our house in Pinellas can house 34. But we are very unique in that when a student in our program is deciding if they're either doing the military, vocational training, or higher education, we're helping them go to that next goal. And then we are providing case management through that next goal. So at any given time, we could be helping, you know, hundreds of kids because we're helping high school and post-secondary education.
And you kind of describe in the book how there's a sort of a triage process, right? You meet with the students, you sort of reach out and say, look, if you want to be part of the program, you can be part of it. It's up to you. But you can't help everyone, right? You're sort of dealing with the tip of the iceberg.
I think we're dealing with the most vulnerable population that exists because really, without support, they're minors. They can't do anything. So, yes, it is voluntary on both sides. And because they hide so well, as Jamal explained, it really, we get them when they are at their most critical juncture of either deciding that I can't go to school anymore because I really need to start working or doing something to support myself. And so we help them change that so that they have options for the rest of their life.
Jamal, what was the turning point for you? What was it that made you think, this is it, I need to make that choice to be part of a program like this?
The turning point came when all my friends, they would sit up there and they would tell me, that's like, Jamal, this isn't right. Like, you have a lot that you can do with yourself and you have a bright future, but you need to take action like right now so that you can be able to do what you want to do in your future and not have to go to work and work hours and all this and try to find a way to get some money.
Mm-hmm.
And I might get in trouble trying to find money the wrong way. So this program, when I found out about the program, I was like, let me go ahead and try it out and see.
Vicky, you mentioned Amanda, the person who, I guess, kind of set you on the path to create this nonprofit. And on page 51 of the book, you're explaining how one of the students you helped, this is Amanda, was trying to figure out grants and scholarships. Now, this is one of those kind of bureaucratic tangles that people have to get through, and it can be very difficult. And there wasn't really a category that fit her living situation. Could you share a little more about her story?
Yeah, so Amanda, as an unaccompanied homeless youth, when the FAFSA, which was the federal aid, was out in her year, you either had to show your family support or be an independent student, which required you to actually like live on your own, have income, which she wasn't doing. And thankfully, that has now changed to where the federal government recognizes that there are kids that are living on their own that are not with their parents or guardians. And there is a box now that you can check about an unaccompanied youth. But, you know, how many kids during her time didn't have an option to actually better themselves? Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling.
What's brought about that change?
Well, I think in the state of Florida, we have been strong advocates and have actually changed 10 laws at the state level to make sure that our state knows that there are kids living in this predicament. I think the government was forced when McKinney-Vento came into effect, where no child was left behind, and then they had to recognize that there were kids that were living on their own. I mean, the world has changed. Families look different. Kids, unfortunately, are separating earlier when they realize that if they don't, they'll be dead-ended.
What does that mean?
Well, if you're a student and you don't have access to any post-secondary education, working at a job right out of high school, or maybe you don't even graduate, you'll live in poverty the rest of your life. And that's really hard. And so to have the option to be able to go to some post-secondary education, no matter what you want to do, changes everything.
So at one point in the book you write, many students in our program are part of the LGBTQ community and have been kicked out of their homes when their parents won't accept their sexual orientations or genders. I wonder what has changed in the time that SRN has been around with regard to challenges facing the LGBTQ population of unhoused students that you encounter.
I'm going to tell you, sadly, I don't think there's been a lot of change. We still see an abundance of kids who are not accepted at home, and we still have a lot of kids that are in that predicament. Even at schools, I mean, sadly, we interviewed a student the other day, and when I asked what pronouns you go by, he was offended and said, wait, you know, I'm homophobic, so if you have people there that are gay, I'm not in. You know, that's a student that I can't even imagine in our day and time that that's not accepted. Mm-hmm. So sadly, I don't think a lot has changed because I don't think that the conversation is there.
Are there, though, some challenges, some new challenges that population of students may be facing now that maybe weren't there 10 or 15 years ago? Like, have things gotten worse in some ways?
I think in some ways, I think that the dialogue in Florida specifically has made it difficult to be authentic to who you are.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a portion of the book, Vicky, that you call If You See Them, and there you outline some of the challenges that you faced personally with your daughter's health and also your parents' financial struggles. Now, your dad went from running a successful business that supplied the embroidered patches for NASA, and then he went bankrupt and lost his home. I wonder how your journey has informed the work that you do with Starting Right Now.
Well, my parents losing their home, at the time, I didn't realize it, but in reflection, I'm grateful that I had 20 years of a very stable life, so very different from the kids that we help. My daughter's medical journey is really what opened my eyes, because when I reflected back that I could stay with her 24/7, but other parents couldn't even get there because they didn't have transportation, or they were working three jobs, or they had kids at home. It just made me realize that really everything comes down to resources, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have them, you really can't help yourself.
One of the things I've found really interesting about this book is you don't just focus on success stories. I mean, there are some people that you lose contact with. Sometimes it's pretty abrupt too. Like we've been introduced to this person and all of a sudden you're like, I don't know what happened to them. Why do you think it was important to include those stories as well?
Well, for one, I think that, you know, it's not a fairy tale. I mean, there's not a happy ending for every single story. What I hope is that whatever seeds we planted in the students while they were there, that they continue to carry them. It's interesting because a student actually sent me a Facebook message recently who was one who had gone away and mm-hmm. said, I just want to tell you that I still carry Starting Right Now lessons with me. And he's actually doing very well. He's a DJ in New York, and he wanted to let me know that he was okay. And so I think, you know, rather than saying, well, we didn't help them, I sort of reframe it in that whatever lessons that they got are great, and maybe they just weren't ready at that moment for all the help that we were going to give them. Because for the first time, you're a student who's completely accountable, which is difficult for someone that has never been accountable.
Now, as Vicky was saying, it's quite a big campus, I guess, like 35 rooms or 35 kids, not necessarily kids, but young people.
Yes, sir.
What's that like? I mean, going from the situation you were in before to suddenly being thrown in together with all these people.
It's interesting, I can say that. I think that a lot of the kids, like Ms. Vicky said, have trauma, and sometimes they don't know how to handle that with other kids in the program. And that's where the house managers come into play, and they play a major role in bringing us together, because it's a lot of, like, problems that can come just from past experiences. So,
have you felt like you've been able to share some of what you've gone through and, like, help out maybe some of the people who have come onto the program since you started?
Yes, sir. There's a lot of times I don't think about it, but sometimes I'll get, like, messages from some of the kids that I was in the house with, and they'll tell me, like, Jamal, you inspire me to keep going. You inspire me to do better. So that's what keeps me going and keeps me doing the things that I do.
Vicky, you mentioned the laws that you've helped kind of work to change in Florida. And in the book, one of your students, Sergio, helps push for a law to give homeless youth access to their birth certificates. And this is kind of a recurring theme. Like, a lot of the stories, people talk about, you know, documentation being destroyed. Sometimes somebody's kind of holding it against them, or they're doing it to try and hurt them. So how big of a milestone was that?
That was huge, because without your Social Security card and birth certificate, you can't get a job. You can't register for any of the colleges because you have to prove who you are. You can't even sign up for the SAT or ACT. So that was actually a major accomplishment. And in Jamal's case, I actually called his mom to ask, because we tried to get it first from the parent, and she refused to give it to me. Now, at least we have access to be able to get it for them for free.
What else do you want to change here? What law changes would you like to see in Florida?
I mean, we're still having an issue with food stamp law, because for someone like Jamal, who is in college trying to better himself, he cannot get food stamps because he has to work 20 hours a week. And then you work 20 hours a week and your food stamp dollars get, you know, reduced. And so he'll end up with $5 in food stamps. I think if you're in college and or technical school and you're trying to better yourself, I think we should help the kids have access to food. The other thing is Medicaid, because if you're a foster care student, you get Medicaid until you're 26. I was able to get the law changed so that the kids get Medicaid, but they only get it till they're 21. So now you have a 21-year-old on a college campus that doesn't have access to medical care, and now they have to pay the university fee for medical care, which is outrageous. Mm-hmm. So that needs to change. We need to be telling these kids, you're important. We want to make sure you get to your goal and give you the resources they need to get there.
Now, you've talked about some of the good things that you've seen change over the last 10, 15 years, but when you look at what's happening now, specifically in the state of Florida, and how some cities and the state are tackling homelessness, there seems to be some laws which are maybe more designed to be punitive. For example, Orlando recently approved an ordinance that makes it illegal to intentionally block a sidewalk, and you have homeless advocates worrying that that law will fall more on people who are unhoused than others. St. Petersburg ended its fare-free Sunrunner bus service after complaints of homeless people riding the bus to sleep on the beach. And in the state legislature, there is a proposal to ban cities from allowing people to camp on public property. It's quite a lot, but I'm wondering, what impact could some of these things have on homeless or unaccompanied, unhoused youth?
I just don't understand why we aren't trying as a society to help them instead of punish them. I mean, that's one of the things I talk about in the book, is that you have kids sleeping in classes. You can see that they're exhausted. You have kids acting out, getting referrals that instead of asking the question of, is something going on, can I help you? They're kicked out of school for the day, which that certainly doesn't help them. Now they don't even have access to food. I just think as a whole, there needs to be a shift in the conversation of how do we help these people instead of how do we punish them, because poverty is almost a punishment in some ways.
At the end of this book you write, my work with people experiencing homelessness started because I was trying to make myself feel better. How do you think your mission has changed over the last 15 years?
Oh my gosh, it's evolved. I mean, we don't take anything for granted that what we're doing is perfect. And so for a student, for every single class that they take, they do a pre-test and a post-test for every single class. And in June, we literally clean our slate of our curriculum and we go through each survey to determine, is this working? I'll give you an example. We have found that we do not feel like we're doing well enough with mental health. And so we're actually starting a new class this year that is a group mental health. We've never done that. We're bringing two psychologists in. We are constantly moving, evolving, and making sure that what we're doing is really supporting the youth that we help.
So what's next?
I think we'll probably start going into other counties. I mean, you look at our kids that are now alumni, and I say this all the time, one of our kids may end up saving your life. I mean, we have EMTs, paramedics, firefighters, a doctor, nurses. We have social workers now in schools, teachers in schools. We have welders. We have automotive. What we're doing is really helping the student become their best self, right? And that makes our whole community safer. And so we should want to help these kids. We should do everything to make sure that these kids are able to reach their goal. I mean, I look at Jamal and how horrible it would have been had he not had this opportunity, because I can tell you he will do something great with his life, no doubt.
Jamal, what would you want people to know about kids in your situation? Like, what do you think would help for people to kind of get a better understanding of what some kids are going through and what they need to succeed?
First, I would say don't prejudge somebody. I would say ask questions. Ask them. If you see something's not right with them, ask them, because you never know what they're going through. Sometimes they need to feel comfortable and just have somebody to talk to. And another thing I would say is the community aspect of it. If the community could just come together to help these kids, you would see a lot less homelessness in youth. All these kids need is a second chance, and if you give them a second chance, they'll do great things. As Ms. Vicky said, we have a lot of different kids from the program and occupations across the board.
What's the future look like for you? What are you going to do?
Well, I want to serve in the military, and one day I hope to make films to inspire people that it doesn't matter where you come from, it's what you do with it. So I want to make films that are like really real, mm-hmm. about what Ms. Vicky talks about, mental health, growing up in poverty, basically telling my own story and stories of other people like me through film, basically.
Well, Jamal, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, sir.
We've also been talking with Vicky Sokolik, founder of Starting Right Now. It's a Tampa-based nonprofit that provides social and health services to unhoused students who are not living with a parent or guardian. She's also the author of If You See Them, Young, Unhoused, and Alone in America. Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you very much, Matthew. It's great.
That's our show for this week. Our executive producer is Grayson Doctor. The engineer for this episode was Blake Bass. Subscribe to Florida Matters wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.